The writer Washington Irving lived during the 1800s. Regarding stagecoach travel, he once wrote, "There is a certain relief in change, even though it's changed from bad to worse." He says, "For example, I have found that in traveling in a stagecoach, it is often a comfort to change one's position and be bruised in a new place." This is how most people live their lives, changing from one unpleasant condition to a different but equally unpleasant position, making one bad choice after another. We are doomed to spend our lives that way, unless we make better choices. But since many people make choices based on selfish considerations, they often make choices that may be unpleasant at the moment, but these are often choices that inevitably harm them morally and spiritually. Only by making Christ Lord of our lives, only by changing to a Christ-controlled life, can we make choices that bring changes that are better for us now and later, changes that make us better morally and spiritually. Mark chapter 5 tells about Christ changing a man's life. It's an account of Christ healing a man possessed by many demons. This man lived a terrible life, and this man lived near a community that had grown accustomed to living with him nearby. We read this account in Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 17. The text says, "They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, 'What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me.' For Jesus had said to him, 'Come out of this man, you impure spirit.' Then Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' 'My name is Legion,' he replied, 'for we are many.' And he begged Jesus again and again to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, 'Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them.' He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, and about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned." When we read the next few verses, we see the world's typical response to Jesus in verses 14 through 17 in Mark chapter 5. Verse 14 tells us that those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and they told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. Understandably, the citizens of that area avoided this man, but Jesus treated him with love and respect. Luke 19, verse 10 tells us that Jesus came to seek and save the lost, and this man certainly was lost. But after what Christ did for this man and this community, the people asked Jesus to leave. It didn't seem to matter to them that their neighbor had been healed from a horrific life of terror and torment. It didn't seem to matter to them that they could now travel in their neighborhood without fear. It didn't seem to matter to them that indeed a notable miracle had been done. It seemed to mean nothing to them that their neighbor was sitting there dressed and in his right mind, verse 15, it seemed to mean nothing to them that Christ was the one responsible for this wonderful development. They asked him to leave. This would be like someone going into Chicago and cleaning out all the gangs, the drugs, all the crime, and restoring peace, dignity, and order to the neighborhood. Then the decent people left living there asked him to leave. To Satan, a pig is as good as a man, and the behavior of these people have caused some to conclude that they valued the pigs more than the man. But that may be unfair, maybe not so fair to these people. In defense of the people of this area, maybe they were afraid because they didn't understand how this miracle happened. Maybe they were afraid of Jesus' power. If he had the power to do that, what else might he do? And it might not be favorable for them the next time. People often fear what they don't understand. But they should have looked at the results. They should have rejoiced that a neighbor and a neighborhood were now at peace. The values of much of today's society have created out-of-control situations. Sometimes when someone tries to respond to the misery around them, others take this attitude that we see here. Give us our pigs. People often resist change. We're satisfied with the status quo. We want things to stay the way they are. So these people rejected Jesus, and so we shouldn't be surprised that we may not be able to open the eyes of some people because they are, as the old saying goes, there are none so blind as those who will not see. But we must be willing to make changes in our own lives. And that brings us to the point that Jesus can change messed up lives. In verses 3 through 5 and 15, we read, "This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones." Then we read, after Jesus took care of the problem, in verse 15, the text says, "When the people came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid." This is what I want us to see. Regardless of how messed up a person's life may be, Jesus can change it. In those verses, this man who had been so destructive to himself, to others, and to the community, we now see sitting and clothed in his right mind. The series of negative descriptions in these verses indicates that this man was unmanageable. His life appeared to be totally ruined. It's not uncommon for people to think that they've done too many terrible things, that God simply could not forgive them. The good news is that no one is too far gone for Jesus' grace to reach them. John Newton was born in London on July 24, 1725. He was the son of a commander of a merchant ship which sailed the Mediterranean. When John was 11 years old, he went to sea with his father and made 6 voyages with him before his father retired. In 1744, John was pressed into service on the HMS Harwick. Finding conditions on board intolerable, he deserted, but was soon recaptured and publicly flogged and demoted from midshipman to common seaman. Finally, at his own request, he was exchanged into service on a slave ship, which took him to the coast of Sierra Leone. He then became the servant of a slave trader and was brutally abused. Early in 1748, he was rescued by a sea captain who had known John's father. John Newton ultimately became captain of his own ship, one which also plied the slave trade. But on a homeward voyage, while he was attempting to steer the ship through a violent storm, he experienced what he was later to refer to as his great deliverance. He recorded in his journal that when all seemed lost and the ship would surely sink, he exclaimed, "Lord, have mercy on us." He claims that he turned to the Lord that night and everything else changed. Following that, for the rest of his life, he observed the anniversary of May 10th, 1748 as the day of his conversion, a day of humiliation in which he subjected his will to a higher power, if you will. He was forever a changed man. Among other songs, John Newton wrote "Amazing Grace." As with many hymns, the popular version often leaves out several verses when compared to the original version. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. The Lord has promised good to me. His word my hope secures. He will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. Yes, when this flesh and heart shall fail, and mortal life shall cease, I shall possess within the veil a life of joy and peace. The earth shall soon dissolve like snow, the sun forbear to shine, but God who called me here below will be forever mine. Some talk of a higher power. He identifies God as being the higher power here, not just something that you believe in. It's amazing what can be done when the right power and ability get to the point of need. Many people have tried for years and failed to make something meaningful of their lives, but Jesus can do just that. Regardless of how messed up a person's life may be, Jesus can change it. But you have to want it to be changed. Like the love he showed this poor demon-possessed man in Mark chapter 5, Jesus wants to help each of us because he loves us. Jesus can break the chains of any sinful habit or lifestyle which binds anyone. But we have to want the chains to be broken. Sir Isaac Newton's first law of motion says everything continues in a state of rest unless it is compelled to change by forces impressed upon it. Of course, Newton was talking about physical objects being compelled to change, but it's also true of people regarding circumstances and choices in life. As long as things are going well, we tend to think we can manage everything pretty well on our own. Often it's only when something terrible happens that neither our intellect nor our money can fix that we are finally confronted with the reality that we are not in control, and we are then compelled to change by forces impressed upon us. We see what Satan can do to people. Satan's ultimate purpose is to destroy. Because of Satan's control, this man in Mark chapter 5 had lost everything. This man had lost his home, his family, his friends, and everything else which made life meaningful. He had lost his decency as he ran around naked in the tombs. He had lost all self-control and he lived like an animal, yelling, cutting himself, and terrorizing the people. He had lost whatever peace he had enjoyed in his life. He had lost his purpose for living, and he would have remained in that condition without Jesus. Never underestimate the destructive power of Satan. He is our enemy. And Peter compares him to a roaring lion who seeks to destroy us all. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 says, "Be alert and sober-minded. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour." Yes, we should never underestimate the destructive power of Satan, but we should also never underestimate the power of God. We should never underestimate the power of Christ to change us. You should never underestimate the power of Christ to change you. We can make a mess out of our lives. We can live a life bound by chains of ignorance, chains of bad choices, chains of bad habits and bad behaviors. And that's exactly what sin does. Sin enslaves us. Sin puts us in chains. This man in Mark chapter 5 was hopeless and helpless. He was completely out of control and totally incapable of helping himself. This describes every person lost in sin. But Jesus can completely transform our lives. All of us tend to resist change, and such resistance keeps us where we are. It's only when we see ourselves in our sin, when we see the wreck we've made of ourselves, comparable to this man of the tombs, that we are finally able to see the destruction that sin is causing in our lives. In order for Christ to change your life, you have to die and be given new life. The Apostle Paul uses this language when talking about baptism in Romans chapter 6, verses 3 and 4. He says, "Don't you know that all of us who were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death? We were therefore buried with him through baptism into death, in order that just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, we too may walk in newness of life." As Christians, one lesson for us from this account in Mark chapter 5 is that there's no struggle we face in our lives that's too big or too awful for Jesus to help us overcome. But as Christians, another lesson for us in this account is that there's no struggle that others face in their lives that's too big or too awful for Jesus to overcome. Do you know someone whose life is a mess? Someone whose life is clearly in the grips of Satan? Someone who is enslaved to sin? If you do, regardless of how happy and how carefree they may act, deep down, they are as miserable as this man was. Don't underestimate the impact that you can have on them. For various reasons, these are sometimes some of the most difficult people to reach out to, but we need to try. These are sometimes the very people who are most likely to respond to the gospel. They are more aware of the mess that sin has made in their lives. Let's all challenge ourselves to pick out one person we know and make it our prayer and our aim to introduce them to the Christ who changes lives.